Can you believe Bob's Discount Furniture opened 35 years ago? Back in 1991, landlines ruled the day. You could not binge watch your favorite shows, and podcasts were science fiction. A lot has changed since then, but Bob's is still doing things the Bob's way, bringing you top-tier style and features at 90s-era prices. Need to kick back? The Sedona Power Reclining Sofa is the ultimate relaxation station. Packed with genuine leather, power recline, built-in charging, cup holders, and Bob-a-pedic seating for just $12.99. You can even pair it with a matching love seat and recliner. And if you love hosting, the Homeworks dining set is built for summer parties with tons of hidden storage in the table and bench, plus comfy Bob-a-pedic foam for only $6.99. And don't miss the best-selling Cascade bedroom set. It features a trendy, reeded design, USB ports, felt line drawers, and three gorgeous finishes at only $2.50 per piece. Stop in this Labor Day weekend to celebrate 35 years of Bob's Discount Furniture.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take for November 30th, 2025. I'm your host, Blois Olson. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving weekend. I myself did in many ways. First time that my son, who plays hockey, was able to be home in a number of years. So having both kids home, and I am reminded that these are the weekends that I catch up on sleep. And those of you who listen regularly know that we run a little early in the morning often, and Thanksgiving, the week between Christmas and New Year and 4th of July, I try to take off and rest up. And I'm thankful for that time. I'm thankful for the time with the kids and family, and just a little break. And I hope we all got it. I also want to acknowledge all of those folks who had to work, those snowplow drivers, because we've gotten a couple storms, the folks who work retail, small business owners, because you don't get a break in Thanksgiving. In fact, if you are one of those people who make a lot of your revenue in fourth quarter, this is the grind of the year. And so I think considering the year that we've had here in Minnesota, it's important to pause and reflect and be mindful and thankful and grateful. I know I am, especially for the year we've had, the business, time with my kids, and all of you. I run into many of you in the community, and you say that you appreciate the show, and I appreciate you listening every week. You know, we are in full pivot mode to 2026, and you know, the week between Christmas and New Year's with Vanita, I'll run down the top five political stories of the year or so. We'll start to analyze what happened in 2025, how it will impact 2026. Starting to have conversations with Republicans and Democrats about the way in which they see the national economy impacting 2026. Republicans are optimistic that the economy is going to have a dramatic turnaround before next election day, and Democrats are betting that it doesn't. Minnesota has had this tradition of splitting tickets in certain years. If you look back to 2008, 2002, 2006. Those were good years for Democrats nationally, but Republicans won statewide. And those were the two last statewide governor's races that Republicans won. And as they look ahead to 2026, those are the signs that we're going to continue to look at. A couple of must-read stories over the weekend. One was a Star Tribune story on Governor Walz not releasing his administration, not releasing fraud files that they could release. Another national story in the New York Times about fraud in Minnesota and Governor Walz. The Walz administration is going to continue to try to shake this fraud story. And many Democrats are starting to worry that they can't and that it will drag down the ticket in 2026. You also had a story last week to be mindful of Senate Democrats in Congress pushing back against Chuck Schumer, feeling that Schumer is favoring certain U.S. Senate candidates. The race they used as an example is the expected primary between Representative Angie Craig and Peggy Flanagan, as where Schumer seems to me maybe putting his thumb on the scale. Stay tuned. We will watch and wait and see. That is one of the races to watch in 2026. The dynamics will be fascinating and will be illustrative of the future of the Democratic Party in Minnesota. As we look ahead to this coming week, I think on Monday you will see Chris Madel, an attorney, enter the Republican race for governor. Madel is going to shake things up. He's going to be a disruptor in my sense. I'm sure we'll have him on a future show and talk more about his vision for Minnesota. Expect his announcement to be a little different. Madel's a litigator. He's a trial lawyer. And I think he's going to, quote, make his case in his announcement of what Minnesota needs to do. Expect him to have a major endorsement coming out of the gates. And this is someone who's represented police officers. So as much as police officers and police issues are in our community and a discussion point in the state, expect Madel to be at the center of that in the Republican race. Meanwhile, I think we look ahead to what will be a short legislative session, again, with a tied House. There's a seat in St. Paul that is a crowded DFL primary with some pretty big Democratic names. That's going to be something to watch in January. And then in Woodbury, Republicans couldn't even field a candidate. Democrats have a three-way primary for that open seat, for the Hemmingson-Yeager seat, when she was elevated to the Nicole Mitchell Senate seat by winning that race. So those are just a few things we'll continue to watch. I think that the story of the year this year is really the election of Representative Colley here to be mayor-elect of the city of St. Paul. I talked to her a couple weeks ago, and in the spirit of rest this weekend, I think it's one of the more insightful interviews that I've given with a public official, especially one on the rise. And as I've mentioned before, we're going to try to reshape and refresh the show here in the coming months as we get ready for 2026. But just know we'll keep going deeper on Sunday Take because it is those deeper conversations that you all tell me that you appreciate here. So a couple of weeks ago, after she was victorious, I talked to Representative Colley here, the mayor-elect of St. Paul, about where she's from, how her leadership style was formed, the impact her father had. And we're going to replay that interview this week on Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. My guest this week is Mayor-elect Colley Herr. Representative Herr, I just first I'll say congratulations. I will say this is, I think, the political story of the year because you were on Sunday Take the week you announced, and when you talked about the considerations that went into the campaign, I even remember you saying you had met with Mayor Carter multiple times before you made your decision. And so I just think that says a lot about you as a person and how you put thought into this. Just talk about the idea of challenging Mayor Carter and when in your gut you said, yeah, I have to do this.
Yeah, I mean, well, first, thanks for having me on, Blois, and I appreciate it. The interesting thing was, like, the thought of challenging him, I'll be really honest, and I think I kind of wear my emotions on my sleeve too much, but it made me, like, sort of sick to my stomach to even think about it because, you know, like, I respect him as a person. It's very clear to me that not only did other people still really like him, but I really liked him as a person, you know, and like, how do you, when you think about going against, like, because when you run against someone, you're really going against them. And how could I do this knowing that I respected this person because he did give me my start in politics, right? Like, I became his policy director. That was my first entry into politics in 2018. And so, you know, like, it was a tough thing to think through. And I didn't tell you this the last time I was on, but, you know, back in late 2024, there were rumblings that I might run against him. And at that time, I was never, not even a thought of mine. And I actually had a conversation with Mayor Carter saying, like, how much I respected him and that if I were ever going to run, one, I would never think about running against him, but if I were ever going to, I would have direct conversations with him. He would not be hearing it from other people. And we really left that conversation a really good place. And so, like, the thought that I would actually then less than a year later challenge him and win was just not something that was ever on my radar.
One of the things that I have known about you, you and I have gotten to know each other over the years. You were on the State Fair show. Some of my client work, we intersected related on financial services and financial literacy. And one of the things that I really have thought of a lot about in your run and this week is how you don't exude ambition. And that sometimes is not the best trait in an elected official or somebody running for office. You are just you. You say it, you just said it. You wear your emotions on your sleeve. How much of this was just getting out of your own comfort zone to kind of self-promote and raise your own profile? How hard was that?
That was really tough. And so it's funny because, Blois, I've told people many times, I'm not a politically ambitious person. I've never been. I never even thought, actually, in my other parts of my life, was I ever ambitious in those jobs? But I don't know why I kept moving up and kept getting to the next thing and kept. And the only thing that I can attribute that to is that when you don't do something because you want it and you do something because there's a need for you to fill that space, that it's just, it feels and looks very different, right? And so, so, I mean, it's tough for me because I don't enjoy doing interviews. I don't enjoy talking about myself. I don't like to have to put out all of these things that I've done or my accomplishments. And I don't know if that's just the nature of who I am as a person, or that's a part of my culture as a Hmong woman, an Asian person who, like, talking about yourself and thinking about the individual is just not something that we teach in our own culture. And so, so that was very difficult for me.
I was just going to ask you about if you thought that might be cultural, or it might be part of, you know, the way of the Hmong, or, you know, let's go back to your political start. Mm-hmm. You worked for Mayor Carter. Mm-hmm. When and how did you decide to run for state representative?
You know, that you're the only person that's asked me that, Blois. You know, it's probably the most telling thing about me. So I came in to work for Mayor Carter right away, January 2018, and Erin Murphy was running for governor. And in January, there was a woman that had already announced that she was running. And it's interesting because there's 10 people running for my seat now. And like when Erin was kind of exploring this, there was only one person that said that they were going to be running for Erin's seat. And I, you know, and I had already been approached by a couple of people to say, like, you should run. And I thought, no, I just took on this job. I'm so excited to work for Mayor Carter and I love his vision. And it was my first time in government. So I thought there's no way I would run for a seat. And then time sort of went on and I kept getting asked, like, I should run. And then it wasn't until April or May, where people in the district started coming to me saying, we would like for you to run because we would like to have an option other than the person is running now. And so I thought about it and I talked to Mayor Carter and I talked to my family and I did the assessment. I thought I would only run if Erin Murphy gets the endorsement, because I don't want to take it away from her. If she comes back, she should go back to her rep seat. And so then she won the endorsement. And I thought, oh no, now I have to run. And so then, and at that time, Kristen Beckman, you know, who was a deputy mayor under Chris Coleman, said to me, you know, why don't you just go to this meeting, you know, the Senate district's meeting, and why don't you just go and say that you have intentions to run? And I was like, okay, I could go do that. And then I did that. And I didn't know that that meant I was going to run. So then after I went to that meeting, everyone's like, Kalee Herr's running. And nobody knew who I was. And I was like, I went back to Kristen, like, oh my God, I'm running now. She's like, yes, you're running now. And I was like, oh. And so it was 3 weeks before convention. And I walked into this convention having never called delegates. Like, I called some, I didn't know what to do. I had no idea to put a team together. And somehow I walk out of that convention with the endorsement. And I said that I would only run if I got the endorsement, because I wasn't going to primary. I didn't even know what that meant. Like, and so then I got the endorsement that day, and then I was running, and then I won. And so, like, my life around politics has always been sort of somebody asked for me to do it because it mattered to them. Because I kept telling people, I'm not a politician. I'm not going to make promises. I can't do things. I don't know. I have to learn. And they would say, that's the kind of person we want running in the seat. We don't want a politician. And so I ran really, like, last minute in that. I ran through, you know, 90 days before this race, like, and I did a similar assessment of, like, where we were with people and where was the sentiment and what are my chances and what does the path look like? Like, I did this, you know, sort of the same thing and thought, you know, if these conditions, like, had Melvin gotten an endorsement, I wouldn't have run. Like, if the DFL had endorsed Melvin in a normal process, I would not have decided to run in August.
When you think about this run, your previous run, hopefully you've had at least a little quiet time by yourself. What have you learned about yourself?
I don't know. You know, Blaise, I'm old. So, like, I've learned a lot about myself through this, through lots of processes. But I would say that, like, what was fortified for me was that you should always have hope. And that even when you think, like, there's no option, there's no way out, or all the odds are against you, that if you work hard and you have hope, that there's nothing that you can't do.
And how, I think, you know, look, I will just say it. I think that's one of the things that I, you know, have told my own daughter and my own son since they were little, right? Like, work mm-hmm. hard. You can do whatever you want to do. I remember when my daughter was younger, reading about the importance of self-confidence in women from their father, that their father had to believe in them for them to believe in themselves. And mm-hmm. that was a little pressure, but I just remember saying, you can do anything you want. Talk about being an immigrant and the American dream and it, realizing that you could do anything you want, or what would it take to do what you wanted? Because I think in this era of discussing immigration, and we don't really ask successful immigrants of modern time what made them successful. What was it in St. Paul, Minnesota that made you believe there was opportunity?
I want to first reinforce for you that having a father tell a daughter is so important. Like, and my mother always did too, but my mother was the one who instilled the values in us and gave us all of the skills and the traits and the values that really guide all of what I do. But it was actually my father telling me that I could be anything. And when I first got out of college and I didn't make any money at all, and, like, I thought, well, you go to college, you get out, you make money, because my sister was an engineer and she got out and made money. And he used to say to me, like, it doesn't matter not where you start, it's where you're going to be. And he's exact words to me was, you might make pennies now, but you're going to make something else of yourself later that's bigger than this. And it was like, I never, and I was 21 when he said that to me. And I still hang on to that to this day, that whenever I feel like I'm getting nothing for what I'm doing, I always remember his words saying, it's going to lead me somewhere. Right. So I want you to know the things you are saying to her matters. She will remember it always.
Thank you.
And, you know, about the immigrant and coming to this country, you know, like, I don't even know if it's a value that is instilled in us, or like it's something that we're told, like, you could have the American dream. Like, I don't even know if my parents ever used that word American dream. But what I did see was two people working so hard who were never home, who were making, trying to make ends meet, who struggled, but never, my parents never told us they were struggling. We could see the struggle, and they never had despair, and they never had like, I don't know. It makes me a little emotional. I've been so emotional talking about this, because I don't think I've ever really had to think about my past. But like, to watch two people come with nothing to this country and like literally built everything from nothing. And like, how can you then as a child watch that and not think you could build anything when you have more than nothing, when you have something to build from? And so I don't know if it was something that was taught. It was just something that you see, and then you take that and you do something with it. And then it's my father and mother always telling us that, like, you have to keep going. You have to keep trying. Like, there's, because you think, like, well, these people left places where there were bullets and bombs going off around them, and they were burying people that they loved. And here I am, like, how could I not? With everything that I have, even if we were on public assistance and I was only eating a meal a day, that was a meal more than they had. And, you know, like, we at least had shelter, and we at least had like you had the bare minimum. You thought, how could you not do more? And so, like, part of it was always like to honor the sacrifice that my parents made. Even if I didn't know at that time that's what I was trying to do, I knew that I couldn't let them down and that failure was never an option. I don't know. Like, I wish I had a really good answer for this, but I just don't.
I think
just
that was a pretty good answer. I think the reality of your story or anyone's story is the good answer. And I, you know, look, there are probably going to be moments where I, you know, critique your mayorship, but I think, but we'll be honest about it, right? We'll be straight about it. And you know how to get a hold of me, but I think that I will say this. I believe one of the reasons you were successful is because you were understated in the way in which you went about your work and your campaign. I remember one of the early conversations you and I had, and it was about a dynamic of a city license that somebody held that got messed up in the bureaucracy. And you were like, I keep hearing these stories. And the idea that you can just do better. I think we can do better. It's not a personal attack on Mayor Carter. It's just to do better. And so when you answer that question about growing up and seeing your parents struggle, but not having to talk about it, they never acknowledged it, but you saw it. And then in your race and deciding to run, you didn't, you know, it wasn't acknowledged. And that's why the opportunity arose to be successful in challenging him. Where you see this, and I think this has happened a lot in the legislature and in political culture across our country right now, is just this idea of we're so partisan that even people within their own party are afraid to critique their own party.
That's right.
And are there things that you feel as though you're more independent than kind of the loudest voices in the DFL, because you certainly aren't one of the loudest voices, haven't been one of the loudest voices. Are there things that, you know, now you're in an executive position that you may need to be a little louder, or maybe a little firmer in saying, this is the direction we're going, or we should go as Democrats?
It's so interesting that what you just said, from many perspectives. So I will say it's so interesting because the left thinks that I'm too liberal, too progressive, and the progressives think that I'm too conservative. And I just think that's so interesting that must mean that I'm walking the middle the best that I can, because, you know, I often think about, did I ever want to do something more if somebody yelled at me? And the answer is never no, right? It's always no. And so I think, like, even if I have strong values, does it serve me and our party and our people that we're representing well if I'm a loud voice yelling at people? You know, and so, like, I've always been somebody who says, well, I can work quietly, but if you push me and we're fighting, oh, we're fighting, and I will fight you. And I've had some viral moments where I'm a very strong person. And it's interesting because your description of me is not being the loudest. It's funny because at the legislature, people are very afraid of me. Whether you are a Democrat or a Republican, I remember when Melissa asked me to be her speaker pro tem, and she said, I need somebody who people respect, but they're also a little bit afraid of. And I can't think of anybody else better than you to do that. And so it's interesting to me that I'm looked at as somebody who's soft and wears my emotions on my sleeve, and that I'm not the loudest voice, or I might not be the strongest, but yet everybody who works with me, they love me, but they're a little bit afraid of me. And so.
Well, I think that's a good segue. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I am going to ask you about your relationship with Melissa Hortman. I've talked about it. I don't know if you've heard my story about the late Speaker Hortman when she told me about you. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back on Sunday, take more with Kali Herr, the mayor-elect of St. Paul. I'm Blois Olson. We're back on.
Can you believe Bob's Discount Furniture opened 35 years ago? Back in 1991, landlines ruled the day. You could not binge watch your favorite shows, and podcasts were science fiction. A lot has changed since then, but Bob's is still doing things the Bob's way, bringing you top-tier style and features at 90s-era prices. Need to kick back? The Sedona Power Reclining Sofa is the ultimate relaxation station. Packed with genuine leather, power recline, built-in charging, cup holders, and Bob-a-pedic seating for just $12.99. You can even pair it with a matching love seat and recliner. And if you love hosting, the Homeworks dining set is built for summer parties with tons of hidden storage in the table and bench, plus comfy Bob-a-pedic foam for only $6.99. And don't miss the best-selling Cascade bedroom set. It features a trendy, reeded design, USB ports, felt-lined drawers, and three gorgeous finishes at only $2.50 per piece. Stop in this Labor Day weekend to celebrate 35 years of Bob's Discount Furniture.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Sunday Take, my guest is Mayor-elect Herr. I teased it before the break, but I think it was 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, you were with me at the state fair and live on the porch, and I was trying to get legislative leaders, I think it was 2022, to talk about the election and what the issues that voters were talking about in the House races. And I asked Leader Hortman to join me on the porch. And for whatever reason, she said, no, I don't want to do it. You should have Representative Herr on. and I said, oh, okay. And she said to me, she's the rising star and she needs the media reps. and I will tell you that I've spoken a lot about my relationship with Melissa, but like we had such a straight shooter relationship over the years that if she told me that, I was like, you better have Representative Herr on or ask Representative Herr next, because there. She was not just, I mean, a friend and obviously a colleague, but did she have an active mentor role? Did you guys talk about the gifts of governing and managing a caucus. Talk a little bit about not just what it meant to have her trust, but what you learned from her.
Yeah, well, and you know, it's funny that she would have said that to you, because I used to not want to do any press or media. And she said,
that's why she wanted you to do it.
She would say to me, like, you're going to have to learn how to do this. And I said, well, it's not that I don't know how to do it. I just don't like to talk about myself or like, look at all these great things I'm doing. And she said, well, then you're the right person to do it. So go do it. So whenever she wouldn't be able to make it on show, she would send me, she would tell them, go talk to Khalid. And so I ended up doing a lot of press under her as the majority whip. And so it's funny that she would say that. I would say, so your question was like an official mentorship. You know, one day I'll probably write this story, Blois, but you know, she and I didn't start off on the best foot. I mean, I remembered she and I got into a situation, and you know, again, it's a longer story for another day. And she walked out of our meeting that day and she went to Ryan Winkler and said, that's your member now. And so she didn't want to have anything to do with me. And then I think that she saw that she and I were so similar. People would always say that she and I had very similar work style, that we understood big picture, but we were not afraid of diving into the weeds and knowing every detail of everything. And I think that's what made Melissa so strong, was it's hard to find a leader who can do both. And so I think that she saw that I could do the work, and she saw that people would respect me on both sides of the aisle, but people were also a little afraid of me on both sides of the aisle. And so she really trusted me. And I never thought that she looked at me as, like, I thought of her as my mentor, but I feel like she always just made me her equal, which was really interesting, because she just started bringing me along to all the things that she was doing. Or when she asked me to be the chair of pensions or to be her speaker pro tem, like, she just kind of brought me along with her. And we would, like, during session especially, we would meet weekly at her house, or we would, you know, or we would hang out somewhere and talk. And it was like me with a group of really close people that she trusted. And it was like she just looked at us as peers, but we all looked at her with such, like, admiration, and like she was our mentor. But I don't think she ever saw it that way.
I would just say this, and now we're going to talk about what your job is as mayor. But I would just say this, as somebody who got to know Melissa, I've told the story on the show, in one of her early panic moments, where she had thought she and her staff told her to call me and say, is this a media problem? Is this not a media problem? And from that moment on, it's kind of like this old saying, E.F. Hutton, like, when he speaks, people listen. And I think she just had a strong, kind of low level, non-yelling and screaming style. Now, granted, I was on the other end of some criticism, and we would go back and forth. And at times it was playful banter, but at times it was really serious. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the job ahead. I know you've given this interview a lot, including earlier this morning on Fox 9. I know you've talked to plenty of people, so I don't need to go into the weeds, but talk about the details that you want to get your head around and your hands around when it comes to governing the city of St. Paul.
I mean, I think that we need to get a handle on how we do the business of the city of St. Paul. I think that everyone who comes into public service, whether you are an elected or you choose to work in government, is that no one comes in wanting to do a bad job. Everybody comes in knowing that they have to work really hard. And so this is not a reflection on city staff, but that we do really have to understand, how do we execute on our core businesses, whether it is you're somebody who delivers, you know, library services, or you're somebody who delivers, you know, people's licenses and permits, or how we plow people's streets, that we have to be willing to look at ourselves, which means, like, really bringing the employees in. I hear often that the employees are the ones closest to the work and the ones who know what the solutions are, but leadership doesn't always listen and doesn't ever bring them in. And so I am trying to figure out a plan for how I systematically go through each of the department and work with department heads, but meet with the employees to also say, like, what is it you're seeing wrong? What do you want? How would you do your job differently if you were being asked to do it differently? And really then taking all of that into putting a plan together on how do we reform all of the ways we do our work? Then how do we work cross-departmentally? Because one of the other big criticism I hear is that the departments don't work with each other or talk to each other. Maybe the department heads do, but the employees don't do cross-functional, maybe to the degree that we would like to. And so how do we make sure that at the core of anything I do to move forward, I have to make sure that my city executes in its business well. And so that's really what I want to focus on and work on. And it's not shiny. It's not interesting. No one's ever going to write about that. But my goal is that if I do my job right, you will never want to write about what I'm doing, and I'll never be in the news. And it falls in line with Melissa telling me I should be more in the news, but I hope not to be at all.
Well, you will be in the news, and a year from now and 3-4 years from now, people will say, what kind of mayor is Mayor Herr? What do you want them to say?
I want them to say that I put my nose to the grindstone and I did the work, and that it wasn't about me and it wasn't about making a name. It was about making sure that our city functioned for people, and that's what I hope that people say, really.
Well, I know this isn't the last time we're going to talk. I really appreciate you having this conversation on this Sunday morning, and I hope you get some sleep in the next week too.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk with people and just share things that the press doesn't usually ask me about.
Sounds good. When we come back, this week's take.
Can you believe Bob's Discount Furniture opened 35 years ago? Back in 1991, landlines ruled the day. You could not binge watch your favorite shows, and podcasts were science fiction. A lot has changed since then, but Bob's is still doing things the Bob's way, bringing you top-tier style and features at 90s-era prices. Need to kick back? The Sedona Power Reclining Sofa is the ultimate relaxation station. Packed with genuine leather, power recline, built-in charging, cup holders, and Bob-a-pedic seating for just $12.99. You can even pair it with a matching love seat and recliner. And if you love hosting, the Homeworks dining set is built for summer parties with tons of hidden storage in the table and bench, plus comfy Bob-a-pedic foam for only $6.99. And don't miss the best-selling Cascade bedroom set. It features a trendy, reeded design, USB ports, felt-lined drawers, and three gorgeous finishes at only $2.50 per piece. Stop in this Labor Day weekend to celebrate 35 years of Bob's Discount Furniture.
A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between thinking about photography school and selling your portraits online. It's the difference between giving away those cookies you just made for free and running your cookie empire. A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between having a movie reviewing hobby and a movie reviewing career. Squarespace, because no matter what you're into, a website makes it real. Use offer code THEDIFFERENCE for 30% off select plans. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
What the heck is going on with all these promotional popcorn buckets? The giant shorts that all of Gen Z is wearing now? And whatever the heck Hyrox is? I'm comedian and certified hater Matt Bellassai, and these are the types of questions I'm demanding answers to on my podcast, What the Heck with Matt Bellassai. Listen or watch every Thursday as I rant about all the internet trends, pop culture stories, and personal mayhem that makes me scream, What the Heck? Follow What the Heck with Matt Bellassai wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back on Sunday Take. Thanks for listening to that interview with Mayor-elect Representative Kylie Herr a couple weeks ago. And I think you can hear from her that there's an authenticity and a groundedness, a down-to-earth nature about Mayor-elect Herr. And she has her work cut out for her in St. Paul, which is the subject of the take this week. The story of St. Paul, a city that I identify as more my hometown than even Minneapolis, because as a kid, that was the city that we conducted commerce in. My mom worked on University Avenue. She was a bookkeeper and financial controller for a car dealership on University Avenue. And University Avenue for a kid from the suburbs was a little rougher than, let's say, the mean streets of Shoreview. But there was commerce. There was activity. And it opened the eyes of this suburban kid to a different economy, a different commerce, a different set of businesses, people of color, smaller houses, tighter streets. And that's not a bad thing. I think if you think about St. Paul's opportunity, you see a lot of hope. Many people focus on what Minneapolis needs to do for its comeback, but I think it's time for us to think about what St. Paul needs to do for its comeback. Let's start with the neighborhood businesses. From Grand Avenue to University Avenue, there is a need for development. There is a need for investment. The East Side has had some signs of hope, but it could, too, use more. And this past weekend, I was shopping in the Tony Boulevard of Excelsior, where they shut down the street and had vendors, food trucks, craftsmen, reindeer, even a little Santa. And it was bustling on a snowy, snowy day. I want us to think about what it would take to have a small business revival in these neighborhoods. Because I'm starting to feel as though with large companies having layoffs, with the next generation being a little more distrustful of large institutions like large employers, that it might be time for us to have that rebirth. And what better place to do it in the neighborhoods of St. Paul and the neighborhoods of Minneapolis in our urban core? Of course, commercial property taxes, commercial rates, commercial rents are in a little bit of a dilemma. But if somebody has a dream and they have a hope, may they be able to start it in one of our cities, where maybe the rent is a little lower. Maybe the density helps them build their business. What about the idea that we could have the opportunity to revitalize our cities, not with major corporations, not with new skyscrapers, but with neighborhood businesses that would employ neighborhood people? Now, I'm no big anti-business person. In fact, if you listen to this show, I think that our large employers don't get enough credit here in Minnesota. But I'm thinking about the idea of starting a dream and living a lifestyle where you are your own boss. Downtown St. Paul is going to need some help as well. I think a revitalization of the Xcel Energy Center, Grand Casino Arena. Oh, it's such a tough thing to get used to, but I think we should celebrate Grand Casino investing in the city. You know, the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe are heavily invested in St. Paul, and that's a good sign. And it's a good reminder that they have used the economic opportunity from their gaming operations to diversify their economy into real estate and other holdings. But downtown St. Paul does need some jobs. It needs some larger employers, and it needs more housing. The chicken or the egg issue has been whether chicken, egg, housing, jobs, grocery, which comes first? Let's get workers back to the office, starting in St. Paul and all of Ramsey County. May the state push all their folks back to the office as well. That will help St. Paul. help the small businesses there. And then I call on Kali Hirer, the new mayor, to find somebody to move from the suburbs, somebody who needs a lot of space, somebody who wants a signature property, a signature space to look at downtown St. Paul. Which business would that be? We have a lot of ag tech businesses. We have fintech. We have a lot of startups. Maybe one of them or two of them or four of them should find their way to St. Paul with a few hundred employees and maybe more. So let's cheer for Mayor Hirer to find investment in St. Paul. And if you haven't been there in a while, go shop at one of those local stores. Just as I did as a kid and learned that you didn't have to buy everything at the mall. Not that there's anything wrong with malls as the birthplace in Minnesota for the indoor mall. Hey, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. I'll be with Vanita Monday through Thursday. We'll have a new fresh Sunday Take next week. You can always follow what we're doing at thedailyagenda.com. I hope you're rested and ready. The next couple of weeks, we'll do the same so that we all have enough energy to get to 2026. That's the Sunday Take, and I'm your host, Blois Olson. Until next week, make it a good one.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.